Welcome to Creative Piecemeal Podcast, a podcast for creatives. I'm your host, Tami Takeishi. Join me for compelling conversations with artists, actors, authors, musicians, and other creatives about the impact of the creative and fine arts in their lives and our ever-changing world. Thank you for listening. Hello, and welcome to Creative Piecemeal Podcast. I'm your host, Tami Takeishi, and today I am excited to have on the show Carol Beth Anderson, YA author. Carol Beth Anderson is an independent author of several YA fantasy book series, including the Magic Eaters Trilogy and the Sunblessed Trilogy. Beth is also the author of a short story collection entitled The Curio Cabinet, and her books can be found on Amazon and other retailers. Welcome, Beth. Very excited to have you on the show today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So I'd like to start off with who or what inspired you to become an author?
I've always liked writing, and I've been writing since I was a kid. As an adult, I had some blogs for a while, and that helped me develop more writing skills. But I'd always said I wanted to write a book. And then lots of time passed and I thought, well, maybe I don't really want that. I've never done it. And I was focused on a lot of other things. And then I went to Half Price Books, which is a used bookstore, a few years back. And I was selling some books to them and it was a busy weekend day. And so they said, okay, it's going to take us about 45 minutes to price your books. And I had to stay there. So I was just walking around the store. And there was a lady there who was doing a book signing, and she was just standing at this table all alone. And I thought I should go talk to this lady and at least, you know, ask her about her books. So I did. And then I ended up buying one of her books and I brought it home. It was just a novella. So I read the whole thing that night. And honestly, I didn't like it that much. But in reading it, I went, man, like I could do this, right? And I had talked to the lady and found out that she had, I think, six kids or something. And I thought, okay, I've got two kids. If this lady with six kids can write books, then I could write a book too. And I sat down that night and started brainstorming ideas for my first series. And about a year and a half later, published my first book. So it just kind of had to click at the right time for me. And then I was all in.
It sounds serendipitous.
Yeah. It was like just the right timing. And somebody else, not too long before that, had mentioned something to me about doing audiobooks. And that had been in my head because I've got a degree in theater and I'd always thought it would be fun to do something like that. So when I met that author, it kind of all came together. It was like, you know what? What if I wrote my own book and did my own audiobook? And that was kind of my dream. And that's what I ended up doing, except pretty soon after starting to write it, I thought, I think this is going to have to be a series, not a single book. And that's how it all began.
I admit I've only read one of your books so far, but I can't wait to dig into the rest of them and your other series as well. But one of my favorite things is your very short stories contributions on Twitter. And I just love every single one of them. For you listeners out there, if you haven't already followed Beth on Twitter, definitely check her out because she contributes a lot to the writing community and her short stories are just fantastic. Can you tell us more about your current projects?
Sure. Well, when it comes to those Twitter stories, I do those pretty much every day. And so that just kind of keeps me writing. And eventually I'd like to put together a second collection of those. And I am on Twitter. It's C Beth, the letter C, Beth Anderson is my Twitter handle. But in terms of books, I just sent my third book in my current trilogy, which is the Magic Eaters Trilogy. I just sent that to beta readers almost a week ago. So I'm waiting on feedback from my betas. And That is slated to release on April 1st. So what I'll do is I'll get my beta feedback and I'll make some more revisions. I do lots and lots of revising before I send to betas. So I don't usually have lots of revisions to do afterwards, but they help me really clean it up and polish it up. And so once I finish my beta revisions, I'll do the audiobook for that. I'll record that. And then I'll get it off to early reviewers and get it published. And I'm also working on a nonfiction book. One of the really, really important things to me in my writing process has been working with early readers. I work with a team of alpha readers who help me as I'm drafting. So they're like the really brave souls who are willing to read something in its very early form where it has all sorts of typos and plot holes. And they're like, you know, this character, you referred to this character as a guy and a girl, and this character has two different names. So they're the ones that catch things like that, that are just, you know, the huge errors, and they help me to really start building a better book. So that's my alpha readers. And then I have beta readers who read something once it's in a much more polished form, but still needs feedback. And then I have ARC readers who are reading an advanced review copy. And so I'm writing a nonfiction book on how to build those early reader teams in order to write a better novel. Because in connecting with other writers, especially on Twitter, I found that, especially when we start talking about beta readers, people just have a lot of trouble finding beta readers, getting good feedback from beta readers, getting actual follow through at all. And I just see people really struggling with those processes. And so I thought, okay, I'm still trying to figure out the marketing piece, but the piece of this that I feel like I've got a really good handle on is building early reader systems. That's just something that has kind of worked with the organized side of my personality. And so I thought, well, I'm going to write a book to tell other people how to build some systems that actually work so that you can get that feedback you need. So I'm excited about that book.
That sounds like it would be a really great contribution to the writing community. I know as a person who's done beta reading and being a critique partner for other people, you sort of have to find your core group, and it's a give and take. You know, like if you're going to CP or beta for someone, you know, you have to do it in a timely manner. You have to give great feedback, and you can't ask other people to read something if you're not willing to give to them. You know, like I certainly never want to be selfish with my writing, you know, and I always try to be open to others when they need feedback, but things come up. And I think that your book would be a really great contribution, especially for people just getting into writing, whether it's nonfiction, fiction, poetry, what have you.
Yeah, definitely. And when it comes to what you're talking about with kind of the give and take of how we support each other as authors, what I have always had as my mindset is I prefer a pay it forward mindset instead of a trade mindset. And part of that's just because, you know, somebody that I might be interested in their genre, and we might not be in the same genre. They might not be interested in mine. And also, I think sometimes when we do pure trades, it can be hard to get really honest feedback, especially if it's reviews. I mean, if you're trading reviews, who's gonna really give honest feedback if they don't like the book, you know? And Amazon really frowns on that anyways. But by doing pay it forward, if somebody wants to beta read for me and they find that to be an enjoyable experience, that's great. And I may or may not beta read for them, but I'm going to do it for somebody else and not expect anything back from that person. And so I think having, like, if we keep a really generous mindset of paying it forward and just kind of like giving when it's the right time to give, it also puts us in the mindset of being willing to receive from other people, even if it's not the right time for us to give to them. And I just feel like if more of us had that pay it forward mindset, we'd be able to help each other in really genuine ways, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I always want to give more than I receive. And it feels really good to read other people's work and digest it and be able to provide feedback, because it makes you a better writer, but it makes them better as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It feels really good when you give feedback and then you see that somebody actually uses it, because you feel like you had a piece in that book. But like you said, it makes us better writers too. We start to, when we're reading with that critical mindset, we're picking up on the stuff that person does well that we don't do well too, and we learn from them.
Speaking of doing well, something that I've always admired about your writing are those just amazing twists. You can take something ordinary and turn it into extraordinary with literally like two words. And for the audiences out there, a great example of that is basically any of her short stories, which you can find again on Twitter or in her book, The Curio Cabinet. It is just, oh, it just makes my heart beat so fast and my stomach turn in such a way. It's just so captivating. I love it. I love it so much.
Oh, thank you. That, yeah, it's such a fun challenge to put a twist into. I mean, these little Twitter stories, 280 characters or less, including the hashtag, it's usually about 50 words. And it's such a fun challenge to try to put a twist into 50 words.
I'm just curious, how do you come up with that? I mean, is it one of those things where over your morning coffee, it just bubbles in your mind, or do you think of it in advance? If you're feeling stressed, burnt out, or having compassion fatigue, there are resources available to you. Dr. Ani Kunimura runs the Self-Care Institute, and she currently has openings for the wildly popular Resilience Over Burnout, a self-care course. It is 31 continuing education credits, and you can enroll now until April 25th. Additionally, she offers other courses and resources on her website. Please visit selfcareinstitute.com for more information.
I'm not usually really fast at writing those little stories. They do usually take a while. So sometimes it might be, sometimes I'm thinking about it while I'm on my morning walk. Sometimes it's before I get out of bed. And sometimes I'll just kind of, you know, sit somewhere and think about it. There are times that it's like percolating over the course of hours, but more often I'm really like consciously sitting there trying to think of a story. And then I sit and I start writing it. And it's usually too long by quite a bit. And so I have to rework it and exchange words and take parts out. And I would say that writing like a really fast one, I might be able to write in 5 or 10 minutes, but more often those very short stories are probably taking me like 20 minutes or more. And sometimes quite a bit more. So, I mean, there are people that write really amazing, very short stories on Twitter that do it really fast, but I'm not one of those.
I think it's wonderful that you try to do it every day. That's not something that I've done, but it's just amazing to see what the writing community can come up with in just a few characters. I was wanting to know a little bit more about your creative writing process and what are some things that you love about it and some things that you don't love about it.
We always talk in the writing community about whether you're a plotter or a pantser. So, you know, a plotter would really plan out lots of details of the book in advance, and a pantser would just fly by the seat of their pants and start with an idea. And I kind of started off as a pantser with my first book, but that didn't really go that well for me. And I ended up really deciding, I ended up reading up on story structure, the basics of story structure and how most well-told stories have certain elements in common and certain important things that happen at certain percentage points of the story. And so as I read up on that, I kind of wanted to become a plotter, and I sort of am, but I'm really more of what people call a plantser because I do plot in advance. I do kind of a very basic plot in advance where I've got maybe 8 or 10 certain story points that I plan out in advance, but I don't plot out each chapter, like what's going to happen in each chapter. I only do that one quarter of the book at a time, because basic story structure basically breaks up a book into 4 parts. Some people call it a 3-act structure, but the second act is really broken up into 2 equal parts. And so it comes out to 4 parts. And so with my first quarter of the book, I've got my basic book plot, but I sit down and plot out maybe around 10 chapters or so for that first quarter. And it always changes as I go. And so that's where the pantser part comes in. It always changes. And so I don't really want to plot out 40 chapters of a book in advance because it would change. And honestly, I have trouble coming up with all of those details all at once. So once I finish that first quarter, however many chapters it ended up being, I go ahead and plot out the second quarter and I just keep going until I'm done. And so usually my ending doesn't change drastically from what I planned it to be, but certain elements of it will change and how it happens will change from there's just a lot of stuff that I can't quite figure out until I'm until I'm actually writing. And so you asked what I like about it and what's frustrating about it. I would actually kind of love to be a perfect plotter where I could plot out all the details of a book in advance. So it's always a little frustrating to me that I can't, but because I think there's this part of me that strives to be really organized about that. So that can be frustrating. But in general, I like having some flexibility as I go. I enjoy that. I think what's hard for me is that kind of the mojo of writing just comes and goes. I'll go through weeks on end where it feels really, really good and the words are just flowing and the ideas are coming. And then I'll go through other weeks where it feels more like a chore. And I don't like for writing to feel like a chore, and where it's just hard. I'm having a hard time coming up with the ideas. I'm not sure that I like what I'm writing. And I don't really find a quality difference in what I write in the times that it feels good and the times that it doesn't feel good. Once I look back at it, it doesn't really feel like the quality has changed. It's more just that sometimes it's more fun than it is at other times. And I would love for it to be fun all the time. And it's just not. And so I do tend to be pretty structured in terms of, or very structured when it comes to like my goals and my timelines and things. And so I'm the type to just kind of push through writer's block, which I don't know if that's healthy or not. And one of these days it may not work, but that's what I do for now, is I just keep pushing through and trying to at least get in my minimum number of words that I've set out to do. But that can just be frustrating when it's not working. And then when something does click, it's such a relief when it becomes fun again.
For writing or any creative pursuit, there's always going to be situations where it's frustrating and it feels like more work than it is, but the reward is always there. And like you said, pushing through writer's block may or may not work for some people, but I know at least for me, when I'm writing something, if I'm stuck somewhere, I might fiddle with it for a little while and then I'll go and work on something else in the scene, and it just sort of falls into place.
Yeah, and I think with my current novel that I'm working on, I was just definitely in a point, I think when I was writing the second quarter of the book, and I just wasn't feeling it. I was struggling to feel like I was writing anything compelling. And what broke through it for me with that one was realizing that there was a character that I had treated pretty badly, which we tend to do as authors, and to, you know, increase the tension. But I realized that the character that I was treating badly was a character I didn't care about that much. And it was a character that my readers probably didn't care about that much either. And I actually needed to change which character I was treating badly and change it to a character that I really cared about. And that's what broke through it for me, and it was really shifting that part of the plot and moving forward with a whole lot more tension than there was before, because there's this character going through something really hard and it's a character that I loved. And so yeah, it's for me, kind of pushing through like that works, but like you said, doesn't work for everybody. It is really rewarding. And even I've had books that needed lots more revisions than other books did. There are some books that just don't come together easily. And so there are books that I've had to do multiple rounds of alpha reading or multiple rounds of beta reading. I remember calling it gamma reading one time. I had to look up what came after beta reading. And it's frustrating when I have to do those extra rounds. But like one of my books that the prequel for my current series right now, it's just a freebie that my newsletter subscribers get. And that book just required so many revisions. And I got some really rough feedback throughout. But it was so rewarding when it ended up coming together and people started reading it and being like, wow, this is great. And I went, well, I'm sure glad, because by the time I was done with it, I didn't know if it was good or not, because I'd put so much thought into it. And yeah, it's really rewarding when you push through and it actually
How works. Has the current situation changed or affected your creative process and your day-to-day writing life?
When COVID first started and everything was just so much up in the air, I definitely wasn't writing as much for the first several weeks. I was kind of just finding other ways to cope. I was baking a lot for some reason. I've always been a bread baker, but I was baking just massive quantities of sourdough bread. And I was doing a project that connected people in my community who needed items. And so I was working really heavily on that project. And I don't know, I just felt really unfocused for a while. And I knew that like baking lots and lots of bread didn't make a lot of logical sense, but I just kind of also knew that's what my coping mechanism was for whatever reason it was. And as we kind of settled into a new normal, I actually ended up really kind of enjoying having time at home. I've liked time at home already. I enjoyed having my family at home for a long period of time and felt like that was a good time for us. It did make certain writing things or more difficult, you know, just trying to focus on writing when you've got kids in the house and my husband at home working. And sometimes, like, I think all four of us may have been on Zoom at once one time, you know, on all different meetings and stuff. And then since I record my own audiobooks, that definitely was a challenge with everybody home and trying to do that and find ways to do that where it wasn't too loud in the house. So, but I would say that after my initial days of feeling less focused, I kind of just got into a new routine and actually was probably able to work more on my books than usual, just because we didn't have as many responsibilities as usual, you know, not as many kids activities to drive people to and things like that. So I, working from home already, it hasn't ended up being a huge shift once I got to a better place with my mental health, with just adjusting to how everything had changed.
As artists, we're always learning and growing. And I'm just wondering what, if there are any creative writing books that you've always turned to or other things that you do to continue to learn and grow as a writer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on a lot of different email newsletters and a lot of that's kind of marketing focused with, you know, just different people who help. I'm trying to think of names now. Joanna Penn and Kindlepreneur, a lot of different people that put out lots of marketing tips. But in terms of books, I would say the best writing books that I've read have been focused a lot on kind of story structure, because that's something I came into my first novel not knowing anything about. And so I've really enjoyed K.M. Weiland wrote a book called Creating Character Arcs. And it's all about how character arcs fit in with story structure. And, you know, so you've got a character that learns a certain thing at a certain point of the story and just how they shift. And it's an incredible book because it really teaches you a lot about story structure, but how that specifically works with characters. She also has an amazing free blog series on story structure that was really good for me when I first read it. And there's another book, Save the Cat Writes a Novel. A lot of people have heard of the Save a Cat. It started out as a screenwriting story structure method, and a lot of novelists were adapting it to novel writing. So eventually somebody in the Save the Cat organization wrote Save the Cat Writes a Novel. I forgot what the author's name is, but really, really good. That one's excellent. The first one I ever read was, I think it was called The Secrets of Story by Matt Bird. That one's pretty good. For me, in terms of craft, learning about story structure has been a big focus for me. I've read On Writing by Stephen King, of course, which is a classic and is really good. I really enjoyed it. That's one that kind of bugs me, not because of what he wrote, but because a lot of people have taken what he wrote and made it into like these hardcore writing rules, like where they'll jump down your throat for using any adverbs. And really, I mean, Stephen King uses adverbs. So they kind of take his principles and they turn them into rules, which bugs me, but there are really good principles.
That is a classic. I remember reading that one in high school, and that was actually the very first Stephen King novel I'd ever read and it wasn't even one of his scary books.
Right. Yeah. I don't usually read much Stephen King. So I think the only two I've ever read of his are On Writing and then 11/22/63. Have you read that one?
I have not.
It's good. See, I'm not a horror reader, but 11/22/63 is kind of more sci-fi. And it's about a guy who goes back in time to try to stop the Kennedy assassination. It's really good.
So speaking of books that you like, what are some of your favorite just fiction books? And what's the last book you read?
I'll start with childhood. My favorite books as a kid were the Narnia books, and those have remained some of my favorite books. I loved Little Women as a kid. I read that one over and over. And as an adult, I would say right now I have three favorite authors. Brent Weeks, specifically his Lightbringer trilogy, or I'm sorry, it's not a trilogy. It was supposed to be a trilogy, but it turned into five books. So his Lightbringer series is amazing, just incredibly crafted epic fantasy with incredible characterizations. I mean, I just can't say enough about it. There's another fantasy writer. His name is Michael J. Sullivan. And he's really inspiring because he actually started off as a self-published author and then ended up getting picked up by Orbit, I think. So one of the big five, and becoming really, really successful with a series called Rhaera Revelations. And now he's actually back to self-publishing. So he's done a little bit of everything and has just written. I love his books. They're not as sort of in-depth or epic in scope as Brent Weeks, but the characterizations are great. And he really builds incredible worlds. And then I just recently finally got into Leigh Bardugo and read her Grisha books. The first one is Shadow and Bone, and that trilogy. And I just was like, man, what took me so long to get to those? She wrote those several years back, and really inspiring to me. And I mean, the type of inspiring where I was like pulling out my phone and writing notes about what she was really good at that I want to be better at in my books. And I don't usually do that. So those books really are in my head a lot right now. I just started reading Six of Crows, which is another of hers. And as I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do in my next series, I feel like her writing is really affecting me right now. And the last book I read, let me make sure I get the title right, was a book that I read as a beta reader. And it was called Fourth Sister by M.L. Farb. And she's somebody that I've done some beta reading for. And she's doing some cool stuff where she takes old old kind of fables or fairy tales. It's not quite the type of fairy tale retelling that I'm used to. These are more kind of folk tales that she retells. And Fourth Sister is like an Asian folk tale. And so I just did a beta read for her. So that was cool. She's a very good author. And like I said, I'm currently reading Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo.
We're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to have more with YA author Carol Beth Anderson. Hey, listeners, if you're looking for more podcasts like mine, Creative Piecemeal, check out the Music Therapy podcast, Musician's Dish with Robin and Audra, Inside the Musician's Brain with Christopher Pandolfi, Rhapsody in Reverie, or even Artrepreneur Creative Careers podcast, all available to stream on your favorite podcast. And we're back with YA author Carol Beth Anderson. Welcome back to Creative Piecemeal Podcast.
Thanks, Tammy. It's good to be here.
We're going
to
just jump right in. And I was wondering, what is one common myth about the writing field or the writing process?
I'm going to stick with a myth about publishing specifically. And I think it's that the myth that if you write it, or at least if you write it well, they will come. And I was just chatting with somebody on Twitter about this yesterday, that I think most of us who maybe like do indie publishing have expectations that are just unrealistic when we go into it. Publishing is a really, really competitive field, and there's just no way to get around that. There are genres that are less competitive and that can certainly help. If you do traditional publishing, it usually takes a really long time. And even most traditionally published authors, I would say this is one myth. People think, oh, if you're published by one of the big five publishers, you're making enough money to live on. Whereas in reality, even most people who are published by the big five have day jobs, because it's just really hard to make money in publishing. And then when it comes to indie publishing, it's not as hard to publish because anybody can publish, but it's still really hard to make what you might consider a living. And there are people that do it and they do it really, really well. It's definitely not a matter of if you write it, they will come. There's always a marketing piece. And whether you're published by a publisher or by yourself, marketing is a huge, huge part of what you have to do.
That's definitely something I've noticed as well, especially like if you watch a movie or a TV show and people are like, oh, I got a book deal. Like the character says that, and you know, and then it shows them like buying their dream home or something like that. You know, it's definitely a myth that seems to be pervasive. And there was a hashtag going around a while ago about like something about advances or regarding transparency with advances. And I think it was very, very interesting because it showed the disparity between authors, not only authors of different racial color getting different advances, but also from different publishing houses, the difference between small and large, and also from genre to genre, I've noticed. Like certain genres, they will just pay a lot for a book. You've had a lot of experience with self-publishing. What is some advice you would give to someone just starting out and with a book ready to self-publish?
Right. Absolutely. And I love that hashtag because people were really bringing stuff into the light. It definitely brought about disparities between where people of color were not getting paid as much. It was a really good, I'm sure painful, but good thing to bring to light. And you're right. When you start to realize what people are actually making, you realize how hard it is to live on it. And especially if you look at, let's say that somebody gets a $50,000 advance, which is really good. Very, very few first-time authors get a $50,000 advance. And you also have to realize a lot of authors never earn out their advance. So they get their advance, but they never make another penny on it, right? So if you get a $50,000 advance, that sounds really great, except that if that's a book that you spent 2 years on, that's $25,000 a year pre-tax. And when you're an author, you're self-employed. So you're paying self-employment taxes if you're in the US. And so even a $50,000 advance, which very few people get, is really not enough to actually live on for most people. So it is really, really eye-opening. And that I love that example that you gave of in movies, because it's so true. And really the people who get those huge advances, I mean, there are the unicorns who get, you know, they get different publishing houses that are bidding on their stuff and they get a massive advance for their first book. But that's maybe like 1 in 1,000. Whereas most of the time, the people who are getting the huge advances are people who are famous already. And so, of course, if you're a former president or a movie star, you're going to get a big advance on your book because you have already built a large audience. But if you're not already famous, then you're just not usually going to start with much.
It sounds like publishing, whether it's self-publishing or with a traditional publishing house, definitely has its ups and downs. What sort of motivates you in addition to the love of writing? What keeps you motivated when you've got the hard days or hard months?
I would say I always tell people it's a marathon, not a sprint. For most people, it's not something where you really, really quickly get a large audience. And so if you can look at it as a marathon, not a sprint, that helps. I try to be pretty open about some of the financial side of it, because I think just like with traditional publishing, there's not a lot of openness in a lot of self-publishing. And so I just in August became profitable, where I've tracked really, really carefully what I've spent since I first started writing in 2017 and then published at the end of 2018. And so it took me almost 2 years and like 7 books to finally break even, where I had bought software and I had, you know, paid for editing and book covers and just all these different things you pay for. And yes, I'm profitable now, but I'm not making a whole lot. And so I like to be open about that, because I think a lot of people look at like my Twitter following, or they look at how many reviews I have on a book. I've got a book that has like 173 reviews. And so people think I'm making a lot of money, and I'm just not. And I just think it's really important to be open about that. I love what I do. I absolutely love it, but it's still really hard to make money. And right now I'm in between book releases. So I'm just not selling that much, because it's been a few months since I've released anything, and it's a few more months before I'm going to release anything else. And so I don't mean to sound pessimistic there. I want people to like go into it realistically, realizing that you can write really, really well and still have a hard time finding a large audience. And if we can be realistic about that going in, and then start really feeling genuine gratitude for every reader. For me, that's been a big mind shift change this year. Mindset change is focusing on being grateful for every reader. So like my books that are in Kindle Unlimited, if I get some page reads, that means that somebody is reading my book, and I'm thankful for that person who's reading my book. And if I get one sale, that means that somebody actually thought my book looked potentially good enough to buy it. And I want to be thankful for that one reader. And being able to be thankful for every reader helps me not have such sort of like unmeetable expectations for becoming, you know, a rich and famous author, because it's just really hard to get there. And then from a really, really practical standpoint, there's a Facebook group called 20 Books to 50K. And so it's the number 20 books to number 50K, 20 Books to 50K, all in one word, if you search that on Facebook. And it's a Facebook group with over 40,000 members, and it's specifically focused on self-publishing. you will see a lot of stories in there of people who are doing really, really well, like six-figure self-published authors. But the vast majority of us in there who are maybe a little quieter are still just kind of trying to find our audiences. And really, there's every level in there. People who are not yet published, people who are really, really successful, and everything in between. But I would say it's the best free source of self-publishing information anywhere. And so anybody who's considering self-publishing, I always steer them that direction because I've learned so much of what I know through that group.
You shared a recipe from your mom, which will be posted on the blog. And it was something that she put in a specially made book. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? It's such a sweet story.
Yes. So when I got married, and we got married in January of 2000. So we celebrated our 20th anniversary this year and actually got to go on like a wine tour in Napa right before COVID became a big deal. So I'm so glad we got out of here before all that. So 20 years ago, my mom gave me this handwritten recipe book that has all these recipes I grew up with, which was just like the coolest thing, you know, totally like treasured possession. And it's got burn marks on it from a time that I like had it too close to a burner, but it's still, you can still read most of it. So the recipe that I gave you is just one that I loved growing up, and I've only made it a few times as an adult. In fact, it's been years. I don't know if I've ever made it for my kids, and my kids are, 12 and 14. And then we also have an exchange student. That's why there are five of us at home right now. But I don't know if I've ever made it for them. So I really need to, but it's called Heath Bar Pie. And it's basically like an ice cream based pie in an Oreo crust. And it's vanilla ice cream with bits of Heath Bar. And then you make this homemade chocolate sauce to go on top of it. And it is just like so, so good. And now I'm totally making myself want to eat it again. So it was one of those things that we would ask for birthdays and stuff, even though it wasn't a traditional birthday cake, because it's just so good.
It sounds fantastic. I have to admit, I'm really not good in the kitchen, but in wanting to expand and grow as a person, bringing the element of asking for recipes from my guests was not only a way to highlight the culinary arts, but also a way to share community and get to know people. And I've been collecting some really great recipes, and this definitely sounds like one of my favorites, and I haven't even tried it yet.
You'll have to try it. Yeah. And then let me know what you think.
Will do. I was also wondering, before we got into the little foray with recipes, what is one writing item that you cannot live without?
I guess just my MacBook. And that's not a very interesting answer, but I do not write by hand. It takes too long, and I like to be able to easily do edits and things. And I got a MacBook actually before I started my first novel, a number of months before, and I just love it. I was so resistant to Apple products for a long time. I think that's just this little bit of a rebel in me that didn't want to give in. After I got the iPhone and I was already using a Mac at work, I really decided once it was time to replace my crappy little PC that I wanted a MacBook, and I have never looked back. So beyond that, there's also a piece of software that's Mac specific that I would also consider a writing tool, and it's called Vellum. And it's formatting software that you use to format books into EPUB or Mobi, which is Kindle's format, or print format. You can format print ready PDFs with it. And it just makes very professional looking books, and it's really easy. And I use it all the time, because I don't just use it for the manuscripts that I'm about to publish. I use it to send out manuscripts to alpha readers and beta readers and ARC readers. It's just an incredible piece of very, very user-friendly software. It's kind of expensive. It's like $250, but that's a one-time expense that comes with lifetime updates. And if you are in writers groups on Facebook, you just will hear people singing the praises of Vellum all the time. And I'm one of those people.
So one more question with YA author Carol Beth Anderson is, what do you wish you had known when you first started writing?
I think hitting back on some of the stuff that we've talked about, I wish I'd had more realistic expectations of what success should look like in this field, because I'm someone that I can have expectations of myself that are kind of always getting higher and are never reachable. And that can take away the fun of things. And so I think I came in thinking okay, I'm going to write this really amazing series and it's just, maybe it's just going to like blow up and everybody's going to discover it. And when that didn't happen, that kind of felt like a failure, which it wasn't. And so I just wish I had come in with more realistic expectations. And I think I've gradually had to learn those to realize writing books that a certain number of people, whatever that number of people is, writing books that some people are really loving, like that is success. And if it's hundreds of people loving my books, not thousands of people loving my books, it's still success, right? And it'd be great for it to be thousands and then tens of thousands and more. But for now, I wish I had come in with some expectations that allowed me to be happier with the success that I had found, that I did find, without always feeling like it wasn't enough.
That's a wonderful note to end on. Again, listeners, this is the Creative Piecemeal Podcast, and this has been a wonderful chance to get to know and chat with Carol Beth Anderson. If you're looking for her books, she has the Magic Eaters Trilogy and the Sunblessed Trilogy, as well as the short story collection entitled The Curio Cabinet, available on Amazon and other retailers. And Beth, you want to give us your Twitter handle again?
Sure. It's C, the letter C, Beth Anderson.
All right. And that's where you know how to follow her and pick up her books. They are fantastic. Thank you all and have a great day. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Like the show? Have a question? Stop by the Facebook and Instagram pages. Links are in the show notes, or search for Creative Piecemeal Podcast on social media and click follow for all the latest.